Good morning. This is January 17, 2022, meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors, budget session for conservation. This is Latifah Faisal. With me in the room is Supervisor Lisa Heddens, Supervisor Linda Merkin, Director of External Operations Sandra King, Assistant Auditor Lucy Martin, and if you could...
Lisa Markley.
I'm sorry. Lisa Markley. I'm so sorry. On the phone, if you could, Mike, if you could introduce yourself and anyone else who's there with you.
Sure. This is Mike Cox, and I'm calling from the Conservation Center, and with us here this morning is Marianne Harrelson and Ryan Wiemold.
Thank you. And then I believe.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Joe Quaker, IRBM person, calling from the Engineers Building, not too far away.
Hi, Joe.
Ted Tedesco, board member, calling from home.
And Christine Lauer, board member, calling from home as well.
Welcome.
Sorry, this is Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager.
Alyssa Wignall, Director of Internal Operations.
Is there anyone else that we have on the phone that hasn't introduced themselves or been recognized? No? Okay. Mike, did you just want to... start on page 58, or how did you want to proceed this morning?
Well, let's see. I thought in the interest of Joe's time, that IRBM budget shouldn't take us very long to get through.
Okay.
So I thought maybe we'd start with that.
Wonderful.
Page
83.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The revenues, yeah.
I'm ready anytime.
So, just before we get started here with Joe, the IRBM budget, as you see, is a pretty static budget from FY22. It's really a maintenance level budget. It continues existing operations in response to a few inflationary needs. Overall expenses are up $14,000 from 22. Revenues are down $2,000 from 22. So, a pretty static budget. So, with that, how would you guys like to handle it? Would you like to go through it line by line? Would you like us to respond just to respond to your questions? How would you like to proceed today?
I would think if there's something significant you want to make sure you point out, I would say do that. And if we have any questions, we can go back to those if you happen to skip over them. How does that sound?
That sounds fine.
Okay.
Good. On revenues, this is Linda. I had just one observation.
Yep.
And it's that the revenues for drainage district services are down, and I assume that's because we're contracting to have more of that work done?
Correct. Joe, do you want to take that?
Sure. So to break the ice a little bit, you know, I've done a few of these budget hearings, and Lisa Markley's listening, but she knows that I was scared to death those first few years because I just knew that there was a lever that the board chair had under the, you know, somewhere hidden where they could pull a lever and I would fall through the chute down into the basement if I didn't correctly have the right budget. So I feel a little safer here at the Engineers Building. No, that I think I'm on a concrete path, so I can't get me from there. But so drain stitch fees are going to go down because we are kind of switching over to contract-based labor, as Linda, you mentioned. And that's with, you know, we're getting out of, it's the seventh or eighth year, so we've done quite a bit of logging over those years, and now we're switching over to applying herbicide on reed sprouts and things like that. And we have went ahead and contacted some of the contractors to do this work and are hopefully switching over. With that, I did talk to Tyler today, who's driving back from South Dakota, and he reminded me that this does reflect a little bit of some of the work that's going on or proposed to go on in some of our open ditches where we were going to do some brush control, but they're, you know, we're going ahead with doing some major projects on these open ditches, as you're aware of, cleaning out and removing trees. So we won't be doing that. So that's really all I have to add, if there's any other questions on drainage district stuff.
I think that's really the only thing I had.
So, pretty one thing, some salient points here. You will see, and you'll see this in the conservation budget too. It's a pretty small number, but we are asking for a increase in seasonal wages. We have been in the last few years. We've trying to increase those by a quarter a year. Is what we have been doing. And so IRVM is consistent with that. So we've got a little bit of increase in there for wages. We've got we're pretty static on chemicals. We're pretty static on seed. Those have come to two of the bigger expenses for IRVM, aside from salaries. Fuel, we were showing an increase to the $3 a gallon in fuel. No more significant, we're not anticipating more consumption, but just that increased price. Buildings and equipment, we are requesting an increase, $2,500 to plumb in a shower at the IRVM shop. We've got a safety shower there now, but it's not plumbed in yet, and so this would be some money to get that plumbed in. With the amount of chemicals that folks work with out there, it's just this is something that we needed to get in place, and so something that we're asking for here, a small amount of money to plumb that in. And then other than that, the budget does represent replacement of one of the tractors. It's a tractor that, we transitioned from conservation over to IRVM, golly, 3-4 years ago, somewhere in there. And yeah. So Joe and Tyler and staff have continued to use it, and now it's time to replace that. And then you look at the very last line, it'd be on account 633. We are looking at doing some LRTF grant requests for some various pieces of equipment, pallet forks to help unload mulch, skid loader adapter, and then replace a trailer as well. And Joe, how old is that trailer?
Well, it was custom built for us in 1987. It's been a great tractor, but I don't think I can rebuild it anymore. It's time to go.
So Mike, these are grant requests. Is this a pretty sure grant? This is something you normally get if you ask for money?
Yes, we feel pretty confident about these.
Okay. Thank you.
Joe, I went over that really quick. Anything to add?
Just to back up to the tractor, I did a little research this weekend on it. That's a 20-year-old unit that we purchased, or the conservation, well, I say we, It's been a great little tracker. It only has 900 hours on it, so it doesn't get used a lot because it's two-wheel drive, and it's, you know, it pulls the combines nice on flat areas, but for us in roadsides and up and down, you know, slopes and things, we're hoping to get a four-wheel drive, another little 40 to 50 horse tracker to replace this. And the 5320 is in great shape. It will bring you know, with today's market going to auction, we should do really well from what we're seeing on the other equipment that we've been selling. This thing could go, I have 12,000, but it could go for much more. I mean, I don't know if you saw what our drill went for at Bob Daly's auction in December, but we got just as much money out of that old drill as what I bought it for back in 1999. So it's just crazy out there. But anyway, I just wanted to throw a little info to you, to the board on the tractor. I think everything else is a pretty much of a need and not a want budget. Like Mike said, kind of status quo. So if there's any questions, I'll be glad to help.
Well, and Lisa, what happens with when they sell the equipment? Where do those funds go?
So there's the revenue line on page 83, sale of fixed assets.
It shows it yet remaining.
And he did list on page 84 in his narrative the sale of the tractor at $12,000 and the sale of the trailer at $500.
And it goes back into their budget.
Yes, those funds.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
He's already budgeted what he anticipates getting for that
right,
equipment.
Yeah.
Joe, you do a good job keeping this equipment going.
Well, thank you. I think at the end of my run here, I'm trying to get the equipment up to some standards and not be, you know, having some of the stuff lay around that we've been keeping running for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But thank you.
And I think you're right. I think that tractor will go for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you may get more than 12,000, but hard to say for sure.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I don't know.
IRBM?
Nope.
Thank you, Joe.
Hey, you're welcome. Who does have the lever? Is that you, Lisa? Are you control of the lever?
Absolutely.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, hey, I'm gonna bow out and lose some snow. We did get some snow this weekend, so cheers, and we'll be seeing you around.
Didn't notice.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, bye-bye.
We start on 69.
Page 69?
It's for conservation.
You ready, Mike?
Yep.
Awesome. Take it away.
Ready for conservation?
Yes.
So I'll give you just a quick overview here before we start into the budget. But this budget is for the most part a static budget as well, with the exception of capital. Our operating budget for 23 is 14,000 lower than it was for 22. Capital expenses are up roughly 2 million from 22 for a total capital budget, and this is always where we see most of our fluctuation in the budget is in the capital items. But a total capital budget in this budget request of 2.8 million. Of that 2.8 million, roughly 2.1, a little over 2.1, is coming from outside funding.
Coming from what funding, Mike?
Outside funding.
Outside?
Okay. Outside funding.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. The budget does, we feel, represents a wide use of resources, improvement to our county lands and water resources, expanding safe recreation opportunities, and effective planning. Budget improves recreational opportunities for our citizens, for the public. One thing that I'm sure you've noticed and we've talked about before, but public park usage has just skyrocketed. And we continue to expect that that will be the foreseeable future. To give you some examples, Hickory Grove, for example, up until just recently, we've been operating on the idea that we're having about 70,000 visitors annually, and that was a number that was produced by the state. We've got some more metrics now, and it looks like we're just shy of 200,000 users a year there at Hickory Grove. Dakin's Lake, we're just over 200,000 users. So with those increases, this budget is necessary to support that usage. Budget also continues, you know, for the last few years, we've been increasingly looking at what we can do to improve water quality in the county or to learn about our existing water quality as a predecessor to improvement. The budget continues this investment by allocating funds to remove nutrients from an additional 1,500 acres. Secure permanent water quality protection on over 200 acres, and continue our monitoring efforts and landowner assistance efforts. All of those things that I just chatted about are, of course, in the Conservation Board's strategic plan. So with that, we can dive right into the budget here.
Mike, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You said your operating budget was down 14,000?
Correct.
Is there a subtotal of operating anywhere on these pages? There isn't. Okay. What do you attribute that to?
Well,
Projects are down. We're not having
park improvement
projects.
Can you guys hear everyone here in the room here?
You better repeat that.
It's park improvements are down, so like our grounds maintenance is down about 70,000, and buildings and repairs is down. So our equipment purchases and things like that. We have quite a few things that we went down.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So one of the things on staffing, do you want to do revenues first or expenses?
Revenues,
okay, I'm sorry. So some of the salient points on revenue. I think starting in 22, we saw some decreases in interest payments on the trust fund. So we're anticipating that decreased revenue from interest will continue on the trust fund. So we've got that in at $3,500 this year, and we're re-estimating the 22 budget to $3,500.
Hi, this is Nancy Franz. I wanted to let you know I'm joining you from an airport, and I'll participate as long as I can.
Thank you.
Hi, Nancy.
Morning.
And then other revenue. So under other state grants, we're showing $768,000. Those are for, a litany of grants here. One, we're anticipating a grant for water trail access improvement at Soper's Mill. That would be a grant for, we're hoping, about $75,000. We have secured a grant from SERFTA for part of Iowa Nature Trail paving. That's $250,000. We also have secured one from the State Recreational Trails funding for that same paving project at $384,000. And then we are also anticipating a grant from the DNR Fish Habitat Program for $55,000 for McFarland Lake, and then also a grant from DNR Wildlife Diversity Program of $4,000. So those are the anticipated grants that we have in the budget. Other revenues, camping, I'll skip down to that. We are anticipating, golly, you know, Lord willing, we get some rain and Hickory Grove Lake fills up. So with that increased usage at Hickory Grove, we're anticipating that'll bring additional camping fees there. And also, the camping at Dakin's has been higher than expected, and so we anticipate that trend will continue as well. So overall, we're bumping that camping revenue a little bit up from 22 to just shy of $200,000. And those are really, the other revenues are pretty static. You'll see we did put in for a small increase in our trust fund, and that's in donations. So we've been really successful with partners memberships this last year, and we expect that will continue. And so we're really pleased with that. So everything else here on the revenue is pretty static. Any questions on the revenue side?
I did want to comment that it looks like we missed the current year re-estimation on Friends of Conservation donations, so I need to add $148,000 re-estimated there. Or more, I don't know. I think 148 is what you want, probably.
So we had budgeted that partnered membership at $23,000, and we want to re-estimate that to $30,000. So maybe bump that 148 up by $7,000.
Okay.
Which line are we looking at?
Yeah. On page 70, it's the second line down.
So Friends of Conservation and partners are interchangeable, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Friends.
Well, partners memberships are included in that Friends of Conservation Trust Fund line, as are other donations.
Okay.
We just track it separately. It's in the same account, but we do track it separately so we know how much we're getting from partners.
Thank you.
Any other questions on revenue?
Does not look like it.
Wait, so all of your donations go into the Friends of Conservation, or does some go elsewhere?
They all go into Friends of Conservation.
Okay.
No.
It goes into the trust fund.
Friends of Conservation and Trust Fund are interchangeable?
Correct. Yep, I'm sorry. I abbreviated it.
Well, yeah, there's so many. I wanted to see how many. I was just getting confused because there's so many different names here. I wish it were a little clearer, but that's okay. Got it.
Any other questions?
Okay, well, if there's no other revenue questions, we'll move into the expenses. So
if
those
that
should
good.
Be beginning on page 71. Oh, no, 73. I guess the first tier would be in salaries. This is part and parcel with our discussion of the realignment that we did on the field operations side of our program. to increase our add one more FTE, which was approved. So you'll see that moving forward here in this budget. Other than that, we did a market comparison, if you will, on our seasonal staff. It's been harder for both units, conservation and IRBM. I should say of late, it's actually been harder for conservation to fill summer seasonal jobs. So we looked at like-sized counties. We did the same approach that we did in the full analysis of full-time salaries. We looked at five either direction of us, so five larger, five smaller, and found that there was an average of $13 an hour on a pay rate for those folks. So that's a bit lower than where we were. A bit higher than where we were. So we're asking for $1.25 an hour increase in those seasonal wages to bring us up to market. That should help significantly in our recruitment efforts. So overall, that's an expense of $11,000 additional there. I will say the other thing, I don't have it noted here, it's static from 22 to 23, but I do want to offer up that overtime wages. We have budgeted at 6,800. We had that in 22 and we were showing it again in 23, but we did some more review on this and if you guys would like us to bring that down some more, we can. The reason that it's at 68 is that's what we did last year because we had some significant prior years. I think one year we were at 72, if I remember right, 7,200. But that was due to staff attrition and paying out some vacation, if I remember right. So at any rate, we hope we don't have to do that. Most staff also opt for comp time instead of overtime, but we've traditionally kind of kept that same amount in the overtime budget. So I guess I want to say that we're flexible on that. If you'd like us to bring that down, I think we could bring that down a little bit.
I'm wondering if you could bring it down to cut it in half and be 3,400, because that. After, 2019 was your large year, and you said that was staff attrition. You spent 2,800 in 20 and 1,800 in 21, and if you've got most people taking comp rather than overtime, it seems like you could probably take that down 50%.
Linda, did you suggest 3,000?
3,400.
34? That's fine.
I appreciate you bringing that up because, it did kind of stick out and I wondered.
Well, actually, Marianne and I were reviewing this last week and she brought that forward, asked if we wanted to keep it there. So,
thanks, Marianne.
Applaud her for thinking about that. let's see. Then moving down. Some of these other accounts, you'll see we've got some inflationary increases, like 217. We've got shop supplies. Those supplies have just been costing us more, and so we're requesting a slight increase in that budget to go from roughly 12,000 in 22 to a little over 15,000 in 23. And again, that's just to reflect actuals or try to reflect actuals. In 21, we spent $17,000 there, so just a small increase on shop supplies.
Why is the next line item going up?
Down.
Next
one's going down.
It's going down from amended. but it's gone up from all your actuals. You amended it really high. That's what I'm asking.
I'm sorry, Linda. I didn't catch your question.
Environmental education supply. It shows 29% down, but that's from an we estimated of 64, and then under amended, you've got 64 and 54. I don't understand the two, but when you're looking at what you've spent, I'm getting numbers, you know, a 29,000 three-year average. So I'm wondering why your anticipated is up so much.
Yeah, so in 22, on environmental ed supplies, we had some one-time purchases there. We had $8,000 to purchase some kayaks for use in our programs. We had $10,000 for some erosion control, stormwater management outreach. So we had some significant expenses there that were one time. So that's why the 22 figure was higher than the 21 figure. Then moving forward into 23, we're losing those one-time expenses. So getting back to the core operational expenses on it. 21 was so low because of COVID, so we really didn't see a lot of the expenses come to bear or come to fruition in 21. So 21 was kind of an anomaly that it was so low. 22 was kind of an anomaly because of one-time expenses that it was high. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, we should be centering it more on just our continuation of the existing program expenses.
So would it be reasonable to lower it to 35? Since the highest you've had in the last 3 years was 37 in fiscal 2019, 37,000. Then you went down to 29,000 in 2020. So 45 still seems high to me.
Well, I'm looking here, Linda, I appreciate the question. I'm looking at what the some of our actual expenses are on there. We're showing 18,000 for just our public programming supplies. Maybe arguably we could bump that down a little bit. We still don't know exactly how the pandemic's going to affect some of the programming. So maybe we could bump that down by a couple thousand, 1,000 maybe. Supply subscriptions, I think that's pretty consistent. Media, that's the newsletter and such. I don't know, Marianne, what do you think about Linda's question?
I think we could be a little flexible. I know the the bottom three are definitely, or actually the bottom four are definitely static, so we can't do much with them, but I think the other two,
probably. I'm looking at history. I guess one of the advantages of being at the front of a computer, I can look at history a little bit better. So on public programming supplies, in 18 we spent a little over 17,000. In 19 we spent 12,500. We're asking for 18. I mean, maybe we could come down a little bit there. Let's see. The others are pretty static with what we've seen. general supplies. So, you know what, Linda, I don't think we could get down to the 30s, but I think we could make maybe 42 or 41, somewhere in there work.
Make 40 work?
What's that?
40.
Let's try it. I'm a little bit hesitant there, but let's try. Okay. Moving on. Unless there's any questions prior, I'll go down to account 241. 241 is an account that facilities management uses for maintaining the conservation center. And you see it's up just a little bit from last year. Last year we had a one-time expense of $5,000. In 23, we're asking for a one-time expense of $6,000. Other items are static. So we're up $1,000. And the one-time expense this year would be to replace the entry doors at the conservation center that we can't secure. We've tried securing them. The facilities has done great with what they can do. But the fact of the matter is they're double doors with a mullion in between, and we just really can't secure that to the level that it should be. So we'd like to get that repaired. Those doors will pop open occasionally.
So, Mike, I'm just trying to recall. So are those the first doors that you would go through, and then you have kind of the foyer area before you go through another set of doors?
Yep, exactly.
And Mike, what was happening in 2019-20 when it was 54,000?
Let's see.
Was that the windows, Mike?
They went to projects like the ceiling tiles and the multi-purpose room. They did floors.
They
did a lot of stuff in the in our multi-purpose room. They redid the ceiling, the lights, and the floor.
Oh, okay.
And then we did windows throughout the building at one point, somewhere around there as well.
There's a lot of delayed maintenance that needed to catch up on that building.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
So then moving on to vehicle fuels and maintenance again, we did put in a small inflationary increase just in our general maintenance line and maintenance and repair from 42 last year to 44.5 this year. And then also reflected that increase in fuel costs. So between those two things and then a one-time expense also putting a windshield on one of our utility vehicles. So those three things, if you will, bump that up a little bit from 80,000 in FY 22 to 91, just shy of 92,000 in 23. Office supplies. This is again fairly static with the exception of a couple of IT related items for staff. One is a desktop workstation. I'm reading my notes here wrong. It's actually a docking station so that our watershed coordinator who works in multiple different areas can use an iPad and then just get a docking station for the office. Or not iPad, a laptop. Moving on. Again, pretty static items. You see a little bit of, actually a little bit of decrease in uniforms and equipment. A very minor increase in health and safety. $200 is all. And that's to purchase a couple eyewash stations for one of our shops, chemical eyewash stations. And then we get down to volunteer management stays static. Then we get down to marketing. And we are asking for $6,000 additional here in marketing for the website. For those of you that are familiar with the website management, we're asking for a department header package on that. That's going to do a number of things, but for the most part, that's going to dramatically improve the user friendliness on mobile devices on our website. So that's what we're asking for there. That is a one-time fee of $6,000. It's also got an annual fee of about $1,000 that we would see moving forward. But again, to manage that website better for our mobile users. If you aren't familiar with that department package, it's called Department Package by Civic Plus, and it's really, it gives you different tools, or what they call it, not widgets, but the touch buttons can be used by, can be separate from the county buttons. We could have additional touch buttons, and so right now, if you will, our users, if they want to find out, let's say they want to find out where they can go hunting in the county, they've got to really navigate a number of different ways and scroll all the way down on the site before they get to different options like that. And so this would give us the ability to, on some of our more requested site searches, make the access to those much easier for our users. So that's what we'd like to do with the website management.
And is that not included in the work that the website committee is doing? This would be separate?
Yeah, my understanding is it is separate because we were the only department that wanted to move forward with that department header package.
Yeah, I think one of the concerns about having a department header package that's different than the primary package is that it gets confusing for the user because it appears to take you to a different website. It does give the department a little more flexibility with how everything is arranged, but it appears to be taking the user to a different website, and it can be confusing. We're also kind of pausing on that whole project right now, and we're talking about moving with an actual website refresh.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if this is something that would happen this year or is a conversation for next year after we've gone through and updated the website in general, because we've paused on that skin refresh.
Would you see then how that would interface? I mean, if you pause and you're looking at that website refresh, would this potentially interface differently? Or I don't know enough on that type of technology to know if the terminology I'm even saying is correct.
I don't know that you want to that we want to invest in a new department header when we're kind of tossing stuff around on the website in general, if this might be a project for next year.
I can appreciate that. We weren't aware that there's been discussions about doing something on the larger level there. And so to that end, yeah, I certainly understand reluctancy here. I will say I looked around on many of these Civic Plus example websites for department headers and department header packages, and they are subsets, if you will, of overall municipal website that still stays in that same website and still has that same look, but has more navigation options. My opinion isn't necessarily of yours, the same as yours, Latifah, and it goes to a different website or it looks different. You've got more navigation options, but at least for the samples that I looked at, several different municipalities across the country.
And I'd like to, in general, support going this direction, because the users of the conservation part of our website are much more likely to be actually out in a park or out on the road and using a phone, some mobile device, to access information. At the same time, no, we don't want to get two parts of the website, this working crosswise. So I'd be for leaving it in with the understanding, Mike, that you're going to coordinate with IT and with this website committee and not jump the gun, so to speak.
Sure. No, understood. And if it, you know, yeah, we'll continue to work with that committee.
Do you have somebody on that committee, Mike?
We do. We do, but now I think you know that Erica's been on there, but with her departure, we'll need to fill that fill that role. But we'll clearly continue to work with that committee, and if it looks like there's going to be overall or large scale changes to the overall refresh, then you know. I don't know that we would move forward with this, but I appreciate the flexibility, Linda.
Is everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Let's see. Did do a small increase to postage and mailing. Our mailings are increasing.
What is that? That's really high.
2,500.
Well, the 1,900.
Marianne can explain that.
Okay.
Yeah, our postage is increasing, or our mailings are increasing, and we have a permit fee that we pay every year that has been increasing for having our media mailings, so the Prairie Horizons newsletter that goes out, we have to have a special media permit for that, and Then we have not added money to our postage meter since 2019, so I'm anticipating needing to fill that meter, so that's why it's a little bit higher. I anticipate that to go back down again in the future, because if we add that dollar amount, that, you know, it's gone for several years,
right.
I think we added like 1,500 to it, and so it lasts for several years.
but is there an option, Marianne, to add less and to only try to get it to represent the one fiscal?
Right now, I'm looking at only adding $500. So our rent on the postage machine, the permit that keeps increasing, our bulk mail, we're having more and more subscriptions to the Prairie Horizon newsletter, and we try to encourage doing online, but there are quite a few that insist on having it mailed. So yeah, I'm actually looking at not doing quite as much on the meter.
But overall, we're still at 2,500.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see then, moving on. Communication services, static. Education and training, up just slightly to represent one more permanent employee. Utilities, up slightly to represent increase in natural gas costs. And then we get to grounds maintenance, and this one is kind of an in-depth. A lot of things included in this grounds maintenance account. And so overall, we're going on the line from 177, almost 178,000 this fiscal, and we're asking for 105,000 next fiscal. So what that includes, what's in there, there's roughly a $10,000 increase on the general maintenance line. That brings it more to a little bit more to reflect actual. However, that one fluctuates quite a bit depending on if equipment has major maintenance needs throughout the year, then that line can really fluctuate. In FY21, we spent $38,000 on general maintenance. But anyway, we're asking for $28,000 there. And again, these are all subheaders in that $105,000. Our calcium chloride application expenses are going up, so that reflects those increased expenses. Let's see, we are increasing slightly machinery equipment rental. So specialized pieces of equipment that we need, it's very seldom or rare times do we ever need them, but when we do, then we have that rental line in there, and we're anticipating that to go up just a little bit. This does include also $5,000 for water testing kits. Let's see, and what else? Then we get into some specific things for this category. We need to replace some steps, some wooden steps for a trail here at McFarland, so we've got $5,000 in for that. And then we also need to replace some fire rings at the Breezy Bay campground at Hickory Grove. And those replacements would be about a third of our inventory of fire rings, and that's $6,000. So I anticipate over the next few years that we'd continue to move forward with an annual replacement of part of our inventory there. So that's really it with with this category. Again, we went from 177 down to 105. So, any questions on any of those? Okay. I mentioned water testing kits. The $5,000 is half of the cost of those kits. We've got some donations that went into the trust fund, the Friends of Conservation Trust Fund, for purchase of kits as well. So overall, we'll spend $10,000 on testing kits, five from general fund and five from donations, i.e. the trust fund.
How many kits does that give you in total then, Mike?
Oh, golly, that's a good question, Lisa. Marianne's thinking it's about 40. Right now we've got 19 sites that are being monitored with the volunteer monitoring, and we've got a waiting list of folks, so we've got some, we'll be bringing on more sites. So we need to, A, replace the kits that we have, or replenish the kits that we have, so roughly 20, and then we're anticipating a higher need for those test kits. So again, getting back up to that roughly 40.
Thank you.
Yep. One of the ways that we were able to bring that general fund down a little bit for grounds maintenance is, if you look on the next line, grounds maintenance under our REAP account. And so we're asking for, or the Conservation Board wants to put $27,000 of our REAP account dollars into replacing a dock at West Peterson. So again, that's REAP, and that's not general fund.
What's the dock? Is it needing it because it's in bad shape, or is this doing improvements?
Yeah, Ryan's here, so he'll answer that question.
Okay, good.
Yeah, this is one of the docks that needs replacement. The other dock is over 10 years old, and it's wooden. It's just come apart over time due to the wear and tear of the wind and the waves kind of beating on it. This is to make a better gangway and a better, it'll be an improved dock from a maintenance standpoint. It's easier to get in and out of the water, and then it'll hold up a little bit better. So it'll match the similar dock that is down there by the boat ramp. It'll be that same style. It'll just be, it'll be the same product, different style. And then this is the dock that is over by the big picnic shelter on the west side of the lake.
East side of the lake. That REAP fund right now has $139,000 in it. And they are looking, in the budget we're looking at right now, the 23 budget, they're looking to spend $63,500 of that, so half of it.
And for, what do we usually bring in on that? That's the annual.
28.
Okay. Okay, we've got 28 budgeted for next fiscal to bring in.
Lisa, I'm sorry, we didn't hear your question.
I didn't have a question. I was just commenting on what the balance was of your REAP fund and what you were budgeting to spend.
I thought they were asking me if I asked the question.
Oh, you asked the question?
No. There's two Lisas. So when he said Lisa, I didn't hear the question. I thought he was actually referring to Linda's question.
Okay, here's what I've got then. This is right. Current balance of REAP, like today, is $139,000. You're going to spend $63,500 in 23, and you're going to bring in $28,000. Would that be correct?
Hold on here.
I'm not going to the penny there, girls.
Is there someone on that maybe if you're not chatting, if you could mute yourself? We're getting a lot of feedback.
We can't really mute ourselves because we're on the speaker for recording.
I think it might be someone else, Linda.
Okay. Maybe.
So if I understood you right, you're saying we have $139,000 balance right now. We're requesting 63 $63.5 to come out total on our ending balance out of REIT, and we're going to add $28,000.
Correct.
Yeah, basically an FYI.
Yeah.
Any other questions on REIT?
So, okay. Nope.
Nope.
I might have one near the end because I just want to figure out how much all we're spending from REAP, how much we're spending from trust fund. Mm-hmm. I tried to, when I was okay. reviewing it, do some notes, and I didn't get it all accounted for, so.
Okay.
I'll ask that later.
So then moving on, buildings, repairs and maintenance. This is another one that has some general expenses in it that we just see from year to year, of course. But then also some specific things that we budget for. So in FY22, this line, we had $84,000 in the category, and then in 23 we're asking for $66,000. Bear with me just a second. So of that, on the line, some of the specific changes, we're asking for a little bit to improve the or I should say to monitor alarms at the shop and the beach house at Hickory Grove. So that's a small increase. It looks like about $750 on that. We've got a small increase on our rentals on portable toilets, where we're going from $8,000 this FY to $9,400 for next FY. And again, that's just to reflect the usage at our parks. Unfortunately, we still have quite a number of parks that the only facilities we have are portable, so we do use those quite a bit. Then we have some expenses. We got some expenses that we budgeted in 22 that we're requesting just to move that into 23. One is $8,000 for siding, soffit and fascia work at one of the residences. We had that budgeted, but we're not able to get it done this FY, so we'd like to move that forward. Another one that we'd like to move forward is some really basic level bathroom updates that are needed at another residence. We have that budgeted at $3,500 this fiscal, and we'd like to move that $3,500 into next fiscal. This is for ventilation and electrical work in a bathroom that's at the lower level of the house. So some needed work there.
So just a question, when you say you're moving the expense forward, does that take the revenue out of your current year budget?
What revenue?
Well, whatever they were going to spend on that.
It's an expense, not a revenue.
Well, are
you lowering
those
your budget?
Expenses down for FY22.
Yeah, they're re-estimating their expenses down for FY22.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yep.
That's what I was wondering.
Yep. that's a good question. And then we also, I mentioned our alarm service at Hickory Grove Shop and Beach House, and then we have a one-time expense for system installation. That's $3,500. Represented here, and then also represented here is a small storage facility at Dakin's Lake. And I think in the end, this will be a tremendous addition for us if we can get a facility up there that that can house a mower and some just some real basic room for some fuel, room for some a few tools, shelving, etc. We would replace a wood shed that we have there currently that the campground host uses to store and sell firewood from. We replace that one with a bigger unit that we could get a mower in. And so this year, the campground host has been incredibly helpful at no extra money, of course, but just been tremendously helpful with mowing for us up there. And so this would make it so that we could have some equipment up there, maybe not all the time, but have some equipment up there that could just be stored there. So when he or she has an opportunity to mow, that they can do that. The equipment's already on site. And then we'd continue, of course, to sell the firewood out of this. Essentially, this is a large garden shed, if you will. So we're asking for that at Dakin. So again, that takes that line from 84,000 in 22 to 66,000 in 23.
Mike, so then would you eventually be asking for an additional mower then to keep out there?
No. No, you know, that's a good question. That was my first question too when Ryan brought this forward. Like, are we going to request another mower? But Ryan will shed some light on that for you.
Yeah, currently we're trailering mowers up there. We're once a week, or at least once every week and a half, we're bringing 3 full-time staff up there, or seasonal, the full-time and seasonals. Regardless, 3 bodies are going up to Dakin's Lake to they're on the mowers all day, and then they string trim, they clean up, they do some of those other park items, maintenance items, and then they come back. And what this does, it allows our camp host to do a lot of that for us. So instead of trailering a mower up there, we would keep one of our existing mowers up there for the camp host to use, and we can absorb that within our existing equipment. So it frees up a significant amount of staff time in our eyes and put that on that contract position of camp host. So as you know, as we're continuing to expand and grow as a organization, and depending on what properties we have to maintain, we're trying to become as efficient and effective as we can with our existing infrastructure. And we think this helps us do that by allowing our staff, frees up our staff a little bit. You'll see the same thing coming up here for a maintenance line item for mowing at McCallsburg, and that's part of that same trip is they'll stop off in McCallsburg and mow those ditches up there as well. So we're trying to free our staff up from not having to do that so they can go do other things. That's why these items are shown here.
So they'll use the same mower that's out at Dakin's to do the mowing in McCallsburg?
No, I'm sorry. The mowing in McCallsburg is a separate contract, and you'll see that line item coming up here in just a little bit. But it's to prevent our staff from sending 3 full-time or 3 bodies up to Dakin's Lake in McCallsburg for a full day.
Sure, got it. Thank you.
So then we move on to contractual labor, and like some of these other lines, we've seen some decreases. This one actually has some significant increases on this line. So let me walk you through all of these. Overall on contractual, this FY we're looking at just over 90,000. And in FY23, we're looking at just shy of 155,000. So what's in that 155,000? The year-to-year things have stayed the same. as far as our campground host payments and CCI Conservation Crew of Iowa work, that's pretty static. The differences come in these specific items on this category. The first is at one of our parks, at Hertz Family Preserve, there is a system due to the topography. Well, this is a park that, and I'm gonna take a tangent here for just a second, but at Hertz, this was a park that the Hertz family donated to us turnkey. So they did everything for this park, and when we received it from them, we were ready to open it to the public. That's the first time that's ever happened. So tremendous amount that they put into it. Well, some of what was done a number of years ago needs some repair. And so there's some drainage tiles that are on site. This is very, there's a lot of grade change on the park. And so there's surrounding fields and residential areas that drain to the park. And then so a significant drainage infrastructure to handle that water, to take it to a drainage way in the park that then exits. So some of that drainage pipe needs to be repaired, and we have estimates for that at $20,000. So this includes $20,000 to repair some of that drainage pipe that's causing sinkholes and really, pipes are just sub-collapsing. So we need to get that addressed. This includes $4,000 for ash tree treatment at Hickory Grove Park. That has been something that we have done in the past, and so this is a continuation on our ash tree management at Hickory Grove. Really, the intent here, and we struggled with this, we don't treat very many ash trees at all. We tend to just either take those out preventatively, or we'll take them out when they die and then replace. The campground at Hickory Grove is largely ash trees. Mistake number one, don't plant all the same trees in one area. But the campground there, since it's mostly ash trees, our treating of some of those trees, we're doing that in an effort to prolong their life. I don't know if we'll be able to ultimately save their lives, but at least we're trying to prolong it so that we don't have a dramatic change in the canopy or the shade there at the park, there at the campground. So we've been investing a little bit of money into some treatment.
So are you also planting some new different varieties up there?
We are, yes.
What are you planting?
Yes. What are we planting?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have 13 different species of native species that we're replacing these ash trees with, and we're doing that at different intervals, so we get different age classes as well. So we are trying to go native. Those are most most deterrent of disease and pests. So everything from different types of oaks to maples to shrubs, all sorts of different stuff. So. Again, it's the same plan that we're using up at Dakin's Lake. When we planted that new campground at Dakin's Lake, we used the same. We did a lot of research into what varieties we should be planting and what age classes, and trying to space those out and separate them so we don't run into the same problem 40 years down the road.
Sounds like a good plan. Thank you.
And we are, I will say that this ash treatment, we are having pretty good success. The ash trees that are there still have around, I would estimate, 80% healthy canopy. So we are seeing good value out of this investment so far.
Thank you.
Very good. The next one on there is a biotic assessment for West Indian Creek at Jeanette Heritage Area. This year, actually in 22, we did a biotic assessment for Grant Creek there at Jeanette. And so this would just be the next step, I guess, in doing an assessment there at Jeanette for the water health. This is doing it on the other creek, which is West Indian. This is something that we hire the state hygienic lab to come in and do. They look at 17 different water chemistries, and then they look at nearly countless other parameters. So looking at aquatic life, looking at vegetation, looking at canopy cover, looking at percent of cover over the ground, looking at slope aspects, looking at all kinds of things to assign a kind of a health metric, if you will, for the creek. So we've been really pleased with what they did this year, and we'd like to do it again next year at the same park.
Sorry.
I think somebody needs to mute again. I'm hearing a lot of conversation in the background.
Yeah, if they're on the phone, they need to mute.
That's better.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Moving on, then we've also got we've got 4,800 here for winterizing buildings. This is something that we normally do. We do it every year to take some of our seasonal buildings and winterize them. It takes a significant amount of labor, a significant amount of time to winterize those buildings because we're not plumbers specifically. I asked Joby about this and if that was anything that they might be interested in. He said the same thing. He said, well, we're not really plumbers. We wouldn't be any more effective than you would be. So we did reach out to a local contractor and get a price for winterizing buildings. And so that's what's represented here. Ultimately, we think this is a more effective use of dollars than staff doing it.
So, and I'll just add to that real quick. This is also de-winterizing and hooking everything back up in the spring. So a plumber is obviously able to troubleshoot problems better, has a lot of the tools and parts on hand that are needed to fix these items, whereas our staff is running back and forth from Dakins or Hickory in the town, back to town, and having to get specialized parts and pieces. And again, we just think having a professional do that work is going to be a better time investment, especially in the spring when we're trying to get parks back opened up and get campgrounds ready. We don't have no staff on usually in that time of year, which is April. So we're trying to mow and all sorts of stuff just to keep ahead of it. So. It's a significant use of our staff time. We think this is a better investment of our staff time.
And then moving on, we've got $5,000 here for a mitigation bank feasibility review. So what that is hiring a contractor that specializes in mitigation banking to take a look at the Skunk River as it goes through the county and determine where the areas are that might be potential for mitigation banking, and just to basically give us kind of a high level view on how appropriate would it be for us to enter or to start to consider doing a mitigation bank. Let me give you, for those of you that maybe aren't familiar with what mitigation banking is, it's agencies, businesses that have an impact on natural resources, permitted natural resources. If they have a negative impact, then the state and EPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service may require that permittee enter or compensate, mitigate for that negative impact. And so what banking does is essentially it allows a whether it be a private group or a public entity, but allows them to, let's say, do a wetland construction or restoration project that then they could sell credits for through a banking instrument, but sell credits to the folks that need those credits on the user end. So, example, road departments do this quite a bit too. The state DOT has to do this regularly. Darren has to do mitigation occasionally, not very often. But, for example, let's say there's a state road going through the county that's going to have an impact on wetlands, detrimental impact on wetlands. They may be required to buy X number of credits to mitigate that wetland impact that they're having. So if we are a bank that says we've got 10 credits available, then they could buy those credits from us and pay us back for the work that we did and then some. So generally there's always a return on this. It takes money up front to do the bank, to do the restoration work. But then you get paid back for that work and then some over time. So this is just a high-level review to see if it makes sense for us to do specifically some stream bank banking, some stream bank banking, and also some wetland banking along the Skunk River corridor.
Who does the review?
There's a number of different firms out there that can do it. Shive Hattery can do it, JEO can do it, and then I think there's probably a number of other firms that are capable of doing it. Firms that have been through the DNR's river restoration toolbox training.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. The next item is water quality monitoring for $25,000. This is an item that this year, so in 22, this is in the countywide. This is just a request to move that forward again. Whether that's in the countywide or in conservation, you know, we really don't care about that.
I actually already had put it in
countywide. But this is a continuation
of
that same $25,000.
So it sounds like, Mike, like we could take that out of here because Lisa's just saying that she already put it in countywide.
Okay. Okay, the next one, $50,000, that is for the Edge of Field program that you've heard us talk about. So when, I think it was last week even, when Sarah and I were there at your meeting to discuss the funding agreement with the City of Ames, that was for this program. And so this is for offering that program in 23, the $50,000. We will, just as we have done with this fiscal, we will continue to look for outside funding for that. But this just assures us that we can move forward with it. So we don't anticipate, hopefully we'll be able to offset that $50,000 with some outside funding. The next item is the item that Ryan was referencing. We've got $8,000 here for us to contract mowing of the Prairie Rail Trail corridor at McCallsburg. Ryan talked about that, and so we have tried to, of course, I don't like moving things like that forward either, But we had tried to get with some volunteers. Erica, as you know, has an extensive volunteer list. She tried to beat the bushes and find some volunteers to help it there at McCallsburg to no avail. So we haven't been able to find anyone to do it on a volunteer level. So this is paying for someone to do that mowing for us. I think what it saves us is significant equipment usage, wear and tear, and time. So we'd like to move forward with that $8,000 for contract mowing there.
I'm going to ask again if everybody can check to make sure that you're muted if you're not talking. Thanks.
So that's it on the countywide, on the contract labor. Any questions on any of those?
No questions.
But I have it by taking that $25,000 out, it brings that down to
$129,880. Correct. Okay. No other questions on contract?
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Okay. So let's move on then. Let's move to equipment and machinery. This line we moved from 108,000 this FY to 114,000 next FY. And this is a line that typically fluctuates a lot as we implement our fleet replacement program. So you'll see that this FY we've got replacement of two trucks, and then we've got a replacement of one of our lawnmowers. Those are the big items. So the two trucks and the lawnmower are the big items, and those total, golly, I think $100,000, give or take. All of those items would be, the existing equipment would be sold, and so that is represented on the revenue. Can you guys hear me okay? Because this is pretty hard here to hear you guys.
Yeah, is that conversation in the room with you, or is that someone who's at home with their television on, perhaps?
It's not here.
Yeah.
I wonder if you go through the list of who's on and ask them to check.
Okay. Is Joe Quaker still on?
Oh, he left.
Ted Tedesco. Ted, are you still on? Ted, are you still on? Christine, are you on?
I'm on, and it's not, you'd be able to hear my daughter screaming in the background.
Got it. And I know that, okay.
But yeah, it sounds like there's a conversation happening.
Or a TV.
That's what it sounds like to me.
I
wonder if someone maybe doesn't know their phone is on. Maybe.
I think from hearing in the background, that sounds like Ted. I had sent a text message to Marianne saying, I wonder if someone could call Joni on her cell phone and let him know they have an open line.
I think it's Ted. That's what I was.
We're working on getting her.
Yeah, we're going to try to call Joni here.
Okay, would you please?
I'm going to move. We're out of our apartment because it's being cleaned in the library.
Ted, can you mute your phone?
There
we go.
I think
okay.
That took care of
I
it
think
better.
We got it. Thank you.
That's much better. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
Okay. So any questions about, I guess I didn't finish going through those equipment items. We have a purchase of a tree puller. We have a purchase of a one behind brush mower, field and brush mower, and then replacement of some toolboxes. So those are the capital items. Sorry, I mean those are the equipment replacement items.
Ted, we're hearing you again. Something's going on with his phone. Okay.
Any questions on any of those equipment replacements? Okay, then we also have, there's one more, but we're taking it out of REAP. And that's for an additional fleet vehicle. Basically, it's just kind of a general purpose fleet vehicle. And to I guess explain some of the need for that, we've got four full-time naturalists that are out doing programs, and we've got three naturalist vehicles. And we've been able to make that work. So that's not the sole reason, but that is part of it. We've got an outreach coordinator position that's been doing a lot with getting out in the community and doing some traveling. And then in addition, we've got a assistant outreach position that's been getting out some more. And also, we have occasionally, we've got need at IRVM where they have borrowed one of the fleet vehicles that we have in conservation to use it to travel to and from locations. So adding all those up, we really just think it's time that we go ahead and purchase that additional vehicle. We haven't talked about it here in the budget, but please know that anytime we look at any kind of, whether it be equipment or facilities, we're trying to do it through the lens of climate appropriateness, if you will. So this vehicle, what we're looking at here would be a hybrid vehicle that would be fuel efficient. Don't think we're quite ready to go to a full electric yet. But the hybrids that we do have, we're seeing incredible cost savings on those, and we'd like to move forward in that direction right now. As soon as the full electric vehicles come up and can meet the needs that we have, then we'll be looking at those. So any questions on that? And the Conservation Board did decide to take this out of REAP. So again, this is not taxpayer funding.
Mike, do you have just kind of general projections of what ongoing maintenance might be on a new vehicle? Just so we have just kind of a general idea. I know a newer car, you hopefully don't have much right away.
Yeah, you don't have very much right away. I think you can just probably typically look at some preventative, like oil, you know, filter lubes, that kind of thing, and look at that maybe a couple times a year, probably. And then, other than that, you know, these newer vehicles are going to be under warranty for extended periods.
Sure.
We've also been happy with the Toyota hybrids that. Boy, they seem to have that really dialed in and have tremendous product. So we're just really not seeing very much for maintenance on those. So been really pleased with them. But, you know, long term, it'd just be like maintenance on any other vehicle.
Sure.
once we have a replacement schedule with all of our fleet vehicles, and it's predicated on either generally accepted practices with the state for their replacement schedule, like X number of miles or X number of years or X number of hours, depending on the type of vehicle. But every year we look at what the expenses are for that vehicle, and even though it might not be in the replacement schedule, are we starting to put more expenses into that vehicle than are warranted? And so when we start to see increased maintenance costs, then we move that forward sooner than maybe later due to the need, and not just based on a standard, 10-year replacement.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Yep. Let's see, then moving forward, conservation land acquisition, we're at 46,000 this year. We're actually going to reestimate that to zero. And then for next year, for 23, we'll be at 71,000. And that represents 1 year's payment for a land contract, and that payment is coming out of the energy transfer fund. That's 25,000. And then the 46 that we had in for this year for the Army Corps transition expenses, we're just wanting to move that forward to 23.
So, Lisa, Mark, what's the balance in ETF right now?
At the end of this fiscal year, I'm estimating 500,000-ish, 477, I think.
477,000, thank you. And, Mike, is it just, okay, just the two things you'll be taking out of the ETF funds?
Good question. No, it is not.
The 46
is not ETF. That's general fund. ETF is embedded in the general fund. But 46, the Army Corps expenses have not been ETF.
Oh, okay. That's general fund.
That contract payment is ETF of 25,000.
Okay. And you've got, I see you have some more things later to come out of there, but we can wait.
Yeah, we'll have some more things as we go that are coming out of ETF.
Okay.
Moving on, as far as the land acquisition again, then we get down to land acquisition Friends of Conservation Trust Fund. This represents, again, a one-year payment on a contract for the Ossheim property, $17,000. And then it represents, let me finish up with the Ossheim. The reason this is coming out of trust fund is we've been raising money on the revenue side through partners, memberships, and that money is going toward this contract payment. Actually, at the end of this year, I think we will have raised $60,000 through partners memberships, all of which can go toward the contract payments for Ossai. The other thing that's on this account is Skunk River Greenbelt South land acquisition at $343,000. This, we're using funds from the Gladys Louie Trust Fund. We are recipients, as you may know, we are beneficiaries to that trust fund. So we budget to receive $90,000 annually. At times that's been up as high as $140,000, but of late it's been $90,000 annually. And so we're anticipating to spend the $343,000 that's necessary for that acquisition project out of the Gladys Louie Fund, which is embedded in the Friends of Conservation Trust Fund.
And then the total in the Friends of Conservation Trust Fund is?
Right now it's 1.1. Almost, or yeah, 1.1 million is in there.
Okay, thank you.
They're budgeting to spend
421. Page 82.
Total next year of 48,000.
What? 421.
Oh, excuse me, Friends of Conservation. Yeah, 421,000 next year. They're budgeting to spend out of that.
Okay.
Out of the trust fund.
Yeah, I see that. So we're about at 360.
That's right.
So far out of that. So something else coming. Okay.
Okay. So any questions on any of those land acquisitions? Let me and. I appreciate, although there's no questions, please humor me here. On this one, the 343,000, this is acquisition of over 300 acres that is a partnership between the County Conservation Board, the State Department of Natural Resources, and the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. All of this is land in the Skunk River floodplain south of Ames. And our partners were able to get some significant grant funding that will go towards this acquisition. Overall, we're north of 1,000 acres. Some of that will go to the state and some of it would come to the county. We've got multiple phases in this project as well. This is phase number one, if you will. And so the state was able to raise money for easement acquisition because they would purchase property and put easements. They would purchase easements on the property and then restore the property. They purchased permanent easements for restoration. And then they restore the property, and they were able to fund that completely. And so what's left, if anything, is what we call residual land value. And that might be any value over and above what the easement payment was and what the market rate is. This $343,000 is the residual value on those properties.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You said this is phase one of a multi-phase project.
Yep.
So what's the total anticipated cost? How many phases are we talking about here? And how much does each phase cost?
Yeah, good question. There has been so much interest from private landowners to maybe get out of ag on these floodplain properties that's why the state then applied for grant funding for a phase two, if you will, and were successful on getting that as well. So I want to say, just in rough figures, we're probably looking at all said and done between phase one and phase two of a little over 1,000 acres. Phase one is roughly half of that would come to the county, or roughly half of phase one comes to the county, and then half of it would stay in state ownership. And so give or take, that's 600 acres, and then we're probably looking at another 600-700 acres in phase two. Our portion of phase two is being met by a in-kind match that we provided and this gets complicated. This is a complicated scenario here, but phase two contribution is met by the match that we provided through land acquisition at another project. So we were able to do some land acquisition north of Story City. We call it the Wicks property, and we got grant funding for that. We used that to match as an in-kind match for our portion of the phase two grant, if you will. So I'm not expecting that we have any more expenses in phase one or phase two, Latifa, if that answers your question.
What expenses? This is really interesting because you're really talking about getting a lot of land here without any general fund.
Correct.
But
correct.
What about when we get this land? What are the plans? Simply to keep it in reserve, so to speak, keep it natural, or we'll just have our normal maintenance, maybe some seeding, burning, whatever, or are we talking about?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Linda. We would just do passive management on it. We will have expenses with it over time, but we're not anticipating any heavy-handed development. In fact, these are floodplain properties, and so really the only use is getting natural habitat restored, and then in fact, we're not even going to do trails on some of these. So it's just a matter of,
okay,
we'll probably need a few parking lots here and there, which are pretty straightforward for us to do. We do a lot of parking lots.
You got a lot of simple gravel
and
ones I've seen.
Signage to go around the property boundaries, but really that's about it for, say, our normal operating expenses.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. So,
appreciate that.
You're welcome. So really what we're looking at is benefit here. There's, you know, people can go there. It's going to be public lands, whether it's DNR or us. And I assume Natural Heritage Foundation is just doing their usual kind of, help get the land moved over. So the primary benefit I see is water quality, as well as through getting land out of agriculture that shouldn't be in agriculture, right?
Water quality and habitat benefits, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That is somewhat confusing that you were able to use Wix to match it, but good work.
Hey, like I said, we try to turn every rock over in being creative for how to leverage funding.
Okay.
So, yeah, we were very pleased to be able to do that. So, next phase that we're not talking about here, but next phase would look at some property that abuts one of our current areas. So, then, any other questions on land?
No, doesn't look like
okay.
It.
Okay, then I'll get into other capital projects.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a significant increase from FY22. Other capital projects. Last year we had $234,000in this line. This year we are requesting $890,000 in this line. And what this includes, we've chatted about some of these in the CIP work session, but this includes a Hickory Grove Park Master Plan effort. We know that we've talked about expansion on the park. We've talked about the current bottleneck on that expansion, which is the wastewater treatment system. There is definitely light at the end of the tunnel as far as the getting that the existing system abandoned, wastewater system abandoned, and then a new system. So there's light at the end of the tunnel there as far as agreements. And so this is the next logical step in how we take a look at what we do at Hickory Grove Park in the future. The campground there at Hickory Grove, for years, for I want to say for a decade anyway, has been very hard to get sites at. It's just always full. So that was one of the reasons that we did Dakin's Lake Campground, to reduce a little bit of the pressure from Hickory Grove. Well, that worked to some extent, very small extent. In fact, what we found is, not to overuse cliche, but if we build it, they will come. So we built Dakin's Lake, and we found for the large part new users at Dakin's Lake. People tend to get accustomed to certain campgrounds that they go to, and then those become their campgrounds. So there's a lot of loyalty to campgrounds. So we've got two different, if you will, loyal audiences, one at Dakin's and one at Hickory. And so once we get that wastewater system done, then we can look at the campground and decide, do we need to put a new campground up or expand a campground? We pretty confident that we need to expand some camping opportunities there. And then also we've talked about cabins. We know we've identified that Hickory Grove would be a good spot to put cabins, a cabin or cabins. But where? And then we know we've got some infrastructure updates that need to happen at Hickory Grove with utility lines, etc. And that's really predicated on how we develop it, so what amenities we put where. We don't have the answers to those questions, and so we're requesting some money here, $40,000, to reach out to a contractor to have them help us with some master planning efforts in developing a site plan for the future for Hickory Grove. So that's what one of these items is. Any questions on that one?
Mike, I think this one should be paid for from contract labor and not out of the capital at this point in time. I mean, when the project actually starts is when you'll start paying for it out of capital.
Okay. Yep. Move to contract.
And probably the same with the McFarland, the bottom one, too.
Okay.
You want the actual under contract labor, just the 471, or under the capital?
No, not capital at this point, not until you start the actual.
Okay.
So just do the regular 471 for me, please.
Okay.
Okay. The next item on here is McFarland Park Lake Restoration at $800,000. This one, again, if you'll bear with me, can get a little complicated as well. We've got a project going on right now, and we have had for years. We know that we have compromised water quality and recreational use here at McFarland. We get algae blooms so extensively that people really can't use the water. It impacts not just recreational use, but the biotic integrity of the lake is significantly compromised. And so we start with the first step anytime we have a lake problem or perceived water quality problem, and that's to do an assessment. Let's get it, and that through an assessment, we kind of establish the benchmarks, if you will, for the current status of the lake. What the sources of problems are, and to help us identify which direction we need to go in the future to alleviate those problems. So we've done all that. We did a water quality assessment. We did a watershed assessment. And now we are in the design stage for a lake restoration project. We have a cost opinion on the lake restoration project give or take $1.2 million. And so what we're requesting here is moving forward with that renovation work and funding it with $800,000 here. And then I'll get more into the other funding sources in addition, but funding it with $800,000 here. Of that $800,000, $190,000 would be energy transfer fund. So in the end, with this proposal, with this budget request, we would be looking at give or take $600,000 of the, so roughly half of the cost of the project coming from general fund, the other half coming from outside funding.
So I guess I'm a little, excuse me, confused, and might be Lisa Markley that you have to answer. So the $800,000 that he has here, is it $800,000 of general fund, or is it 600, 700? Because he has $190,000 from the energy transfer.
So he's got $610,000 of general fund.
$610,000. Okay, that's what I just want clarification on.
The whole $800,000 is general fund, but $190,000 is part of the committed funds of the ETF.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Mike, where would the other $400,000 be coming from?
Yeah. So, thank you. The other $400,000,
$400,000 is listed on Conservation Reserve is where they're paying for it from.
Yeah, it's down under.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah,
it's down
$610,000.
Conservation Reserve money, yes.
We've got $400,000 of that coming out of the Conservation Reserve.
So the Conservation Reserve.
That makes the 1.2.
The Conservation Reserve is their camping fees that they've collected over the years for their capital and projects and things like that. It's a subfund of the general fund, but it's its own fund, okay? Right now it's got $823,000 in it. And they're looking to spend
$700,000.
So you're spending $400,000. What was the other $300,000?
We're bringing in about $150,000 a year on that camping receipts.
Oh.
So.
Got it.
So the originally.
And to your question, Linda, the other $300,000 would be for a cabin at Dakin's Lake.
Yeah, Latifa just pointed that out to me. So you've got $823,000. And you are proposing to spend $700,000 of it next
Correct.
Year?
Correct.
And
it brings in about $150,000 a year. So originally, in the original budget, they put $700,000 to be paid to build the to do the septic system out there.
Mm-hmm.
Since that got moved to ARPA funds, they're reassigning their dollar, or no, for next year they want to spend the dollars on these projects.
Correct.
Mike, are you still looking, this is Lisa, are you still looking at the larger cabin at Dakin's versus smaller ones?
No, a smaller one.
Smaller one.
The larger one you're looking at for Hickory, right?
Maybe that's
so
what I'm getting.
We had money budgeted for a cabin at Dakin's Lake. We went through design and The design cost opinion of the contractor escalated that $140,000 in the last, I must say, 48 hours prior to getting final design. So we went back and forth on that number, of course, and ultimately decided that that project, which did a final cost opinion of about $500,000, was not feasible. It was more than we had budgeted, and we didn't think that spending $500,000 on a cabin there was a very proactive way or a very responsible way to spend that money. So we did not do it. For years, ever since we did the Dakins Lake master plan, that community has really wanted cabin or cabins there. A previous board has essentially promised them, a previous board of supervisors, that we would do cabins there. And so since option A really turned out to be not tenable, we reassigned and said, hey, what can we do that kind of meets the commitment expands our opportunity there for that heavily requested cabin, meets our promise, and does it in a fiscally responsible manner. So we'd like to downsize that cabin. We were looking at about 12 people, and so now we're looking at a max of 6 to 8 people. The current plan would give us a 10-year return on this investment. Annual operating costs would be about $6,000. It would be a prefab cabin that would have some extra energy efficiencies designed in. So that's, you know, that's where we are with it. And so we're requesting the $300,000 to move forward with that cabin. Let me back up a little bit more. In 2019, kind of as we were planning this, the state released a task force report on cabins. The state convened a task force to look at the use of cabins throughout the state to help gauge readiness to build cabins, etc. And so they created kind of a test, if you will, to determine your readiness for cabins and your market, you know, the ability of your market to support those cabins. We looked across the state at other entities that are offering cabins and looked at, golly, I can't even tell you how many metrics here we looked at. Easy over 100 metrics that we looked at, and really have come down to cabin is tenable there, and thus it does create that 10-year return on investment. Overall, for the other cabins that we looked at that are successful operating cabins, Dakin's scores a little bit lower than Hickory Grove, but overall Dakin's has a score of about 3/4 of the, if you will, the metric for the highest or the most successful cabin. The sample size that we looked at with existing cabins, when you apply it to the readiness matrix, those existing cabins score anywhere from 45 to 91 out of an available 121 top score. Dakin's scores 75 out of an available 121. So Dakin's is I would say 3/4 toward the top of that successful cabin or halfway through the range of those successful cabins at other counties. Hickory scored higher than that at 86. So we know Hickory, the amenities there score a little higher than those at Dakin's Lake, but Dakin still scores very well when you look at the success of some of these other counties that are offering them. So we're very confident in the market at Dakin's Lake, just as much as we are with the market at Hickory Grove. Hickory, you might expect that return on investment, if we were to do the same cabin, would maybe be a couple years shorter than the return on investment at Dakin's Lake. At Hickory Grove, we'll probably look at doing a cabin much like what we designed originally to go with Dakin's Lake.
$500,000 cabin?
Might fit the mold a little bit better at Hickory than Dakin's. So any questions about that?
I have a suggestion that I may not be all that popular, but I recognize the value of cabins, absolutely, but I'm just looking at this, and it's $800,000 for the McFarland Lake restoration, less the $190,000, and then you've got the $400,000 for the rest of the McFarland, and then the $300,000 for Dakin's. You've got enough in there to take care of the whole McFarland project in one fell swoop, and if you're bringing in about $150,000 a year from camping revenues, then it looks like in a year or two you'd be able to build the cabin. So I guess I'm wondering if it doesn't make better sense to postpone the cabin for a year or two to get McFarland Lake done.
Yeah, and I can appreciate the question. They're both needs, in our opinion, but I understand the question. So we're trying to look at also how do we best use our resources to provide the most environmental benefit and the most benefit or opportunities for the public. And so we have two projects here that meet both, well, the two projects that meet the benefits to the public, one of them that also meets more of an environmental benefit. But, I think that the board, staff and board feel strongly that we haven't done this cabin, and it's something that we know will pay for itself, number one. Number two, we know that it is, for lack of a better term, it's a promise that we as a county had made to the community. And so we're trying to move that forward as best we can to provide that. The Conservation Board decided to fund that entirely with Conservation Board funds. And so there's no general funds going into that. There were general funds budgeted for it originally, and so you're not seeing that right now. You're just seeing the conservation funds that go toward the cabin. So we feel strongly about being able to move forward with that cabin.
Well, I mean, in fairness, they're camping fees, right?
They're camping fees, but somehow a previous board decided rather than those to go into defraying the expense of the utilities, which reasonably are half of the camping fees if you look at the expenses, and then the campground attendance, those are all paid from general funds. And like I said, a previous board allowed the camping fees to be put aside for projects.
Mm-hmm.
So you might look at it and say, in the long run, the general fund is funding those projects.
Mm-hmm.
I have a
I suppose there's many different lenses to look through when you when you're trying to make these decisions, and so I understand that our O&M expenses for campgrounds are significantly lower than the revenue for those campgrounds. And so you're right, there are some amount of general fund that's going into R&M. I don't dispute that at all. We've been fortunate that thus far the Board of Supervisors has been agreeable to having us use those monies primarily that go back in, just like any business venture, those monies go back into, for the most part, the facilities that are generating those. And so it's self-perpetuating, if you will. And that's certainly the case of the cabin. Not necessarily the case at the lake, but certainly the case at the cabin.
Hey, Mike, this is Ted Tedesco. Could I just make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Ted.
I looked at, we're charged with trying to satisfy the entire population. In our camping population, we have those people who can afford the trailers to come to our campgrounds. We provide services to them. We also provide opportunity for the primitive camping people, but we don't supply any opportunity for what I term the urban people, which is a family that would like to get out to a park for more than just a day, but maybe a couple of days. They can afford to rent a cabin. And I think we need to test this opportunity because most of the counties around us do provide some cabin opportunities.
I don't disagree with you, Ted, that there's not, you know, several of the counties provide cabins. They provide different kinds of cabins, however. I think a lot of counties provide smaller cabins that might be 2 to 4 people. One concern I've had about the larger cabins is it might not get rented, you know, that often, or it not at least by to capacity. Whereas if you have a few smaller cabins, they might be more likely to be rented. But I have a larger concern that I think we're going to have to talk about, and that is that the Hickory Grove septic moved to ARPA. We just got the ARPA final rules, a week ago, and we're pouring through 430-some pages. And I've been particularly honing in on the wastewater and trying to determine if there's anything. We made an initial determination here, but we need to, you know, but we need to make a final determination with the final rule. So I think some of these things we're talking about, and maybe that's some of my reticence as well, are based on that we are still looking, are still digesting the ARPA final rule. So I don't know where that, you know, that might mean something about the 700,000, because was the septic was previously coming out of conservation reserve. And Mike, I don't know, you had said that was down to something lower now.
Correct. So that septic price right now is for $533,000 is the connection fee, if you will. So so that's what we're looking at. Instead of 700, we'd be looking at 533,000. I understand your question and maybe your concern, maybe more than question, but over the use of ARPA money. I would also say that the lake or the cabin, if it turns out that ARPA is not available, if you guys decide not to award it for Hickory Grove, then that is still the number one priority for the Conservation Board. And so we would move that forward. Are you still there?
We are.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got another line from the admin building ringing in. Anyway, we would move the Hickory Grove forward, and we would then automatically just push back the cabin and the lake.
Okay.
If that ARPA money was not available. So that decision will be made, and I know it's prolonged, and I know you wanted to have made it already, but even though it's taken a little bit longer, it will still be made prior to us needing to commence or agreements on either of these two other projects. So I still feel confident that if for some reason we're not able to do the sewer with ARPA, that we would bump these two or one anyway and move forward with that. Move forward with the sewer in place.
So what Mike, let me ask a question. And we just talked about this briefly, this connection fee. What that means is instead of us doing the construction to connect Hickory Grove with the Colo, they're going to do the construction, kind of front it, the utility company, and then charge us for it, and that's, they're calling it a connection fee?
Yeah, so the agreement that we're working on right now, that Ethan is reviewing as we speak, maybe that's wishful thinking. But anyway, the one that Ethan's got on his plate calls for Iowa Regional Utility Association to do the construction, to get a loan for the amount, and then to only bill us that connection fee. So they are saying that the total cost of construction is north of the connection fee, but yet they will bill us the connection fee. So if for some reason...
Can you explain that again?
Semantics.
Mike,
So they will construct the facility. They will own the facility and operate the facility. They are saying that in order for them to do that, they will charge us a connection fee, plus then they would also get a loan for that, which they're responsible for, not us. So the only costs that come to the county would be that connection fee. But in essence, what they're saying is it's going to cost them, I'm just going to throw out a number here, say $600,000 to do it, or $700,000 to do it. They're getting $533,000 of that from us. The remainder they're getting through a low-interest loan program.
So what will we be charged annually?
Well, that would be predicated on the usage.
Okay, so there's an annual usage fee.
It would just be a usage fee like we pay at Dakin's Lake right now. We pay usage fee that goes to the city of Zeering. At Hickory, we would just pay a usage fee that goes to Colo. Or excuse me, goes to Iowa Regional, who then in turn pays their usage fee to Colo.
Like a big middleman.
Okay. Thank you. That's,
yeah.
We're going to have to.
And then, Linda, the only other thing I was going to say in reference to your comment about cabins and the size, again, we did some pretty extensive research on cabins and market viability. And everything that we learned says that cabins that are larger have a shorter return or a shorter payback than cabins that are smaller, because people want to be able to get out in big family groups or business groups, some kind of social groups, and utilize those cabins. So we're actually seeing a higher return on larger versus smaller. This size that we're looking at, 6 to 8 people, is middle of the road and still returns still has a good return on it, but not quite the market demand that a larger one does.
Okay. Can you tell me again what projects Friends of Conservation Trust I've got Ossheim 17130, Skunk River Acquisition 343, and Dakin's Cabin 22,000 in.
Yeah, so we had raised money through partners for the cabin. So that's the 22,000.
Okay, but here's my question, excuse me. You're showing spending 421,130, and I'm the three things I just read off were 39,000 short. So what am I missing out of the trust fund? Is there a 39,000 coming out of the trust fund?
The 343,000 that will go toward land acquisition was out of trust fund.
And the
17,000 that goes toward Ossheim is out of trust fund.
And the 22,000.
Right.
That doesn't come to 421.
Plus 34. We got 34 out of trust fund under account 223.
Okay, I don't.
The environmental education.
Oh, yeah. On page 77.
5,000 from those water test kits under 440.
Ah, okay. 34,005. That does my 39,000. Thank you. Okay. An ETF is just Ryerson and the 190 for the lake restoration.
There's some more coming.
There's an additional 40 in an account we haven't got to yet from ETF, 40,000.
Oh, the water. Okay.
So if you're ready to move on, there's a couple lines left, and then we'll be ready to look at the overall.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The next line is 627, account 627, and that's part of Iowa Trail. We did receive grant funding, and I mentioned this on the revenue side, but we received grant funding from SRPTA and for State Recreational Trails to do this next phase of paving. And so that phase is estimated at $674,000. So those two grants plus $40,000 from ETF makes that project flush. So there would be no expenses to taxpayers on that project. The 40 would come from general fund, but again, that's coming out of ETF. The next project is water trail grants. This would be for improving the water trail access at Soper's Mill. We're anticipating a $100,000 cost. We're anticipating a $75,000 grant receipt that we discussed in revenue. And we're also anticipating spending $25,000 from ETF to make that balance. Then moving on, then we've got fish habitat grants. We've got $60,000 in here for expense with the fish habitat grant at McFarland. And of that, we're expecting a grant for $55,000. So only $5,000 of that $60,000 project would be general fund.
I'm sorry, I got lost a little bit. On the water trails grant 628, the Skunk River trail access.
Yep.
It's 100,000 total minus 25,000 ETF.
And $75,000 grant.
$75,000 is the grant, okay.
Sorry, I didn't put that in there.
So, no general fund, okay. Got it. So on the fish habitat grant, would there be $5,000 out of the general fund? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's the budget. Do you have any? And I guess before I go wrap this up, I know Linda, you wanted to talk about those the three funds. So overall, we've got trust fund expenditures at $421,000. We've got REAP expenditures at $63,000, and then conservation reserve expenditures at $700,000. So the bottom line, then, if you look at it, the tax asking difference between 22 and 23 is an additional $878,000. If we look back, and I know that looks like a big difference, and it is a big difference. We try to budget to meet need. We don't budget to maintain overall footing, if you will, in a budget. So we're not going to pad things to keep a budget consistent. We budget to meet need, and so we saw our need go down in FY21 and FY22. Our FY20 tax asking was very similar to our FY20 tax asking was $3.5 million, and our FY23 would be $3.6 million. So pretty consistent in that manner. Overall, we think that the budget that's being presented meets a whole lot of needs in the community, from environment to economic to recreational opportunities, and balances those in a way to accomplish as much as possible. So, any questions?
I took off Lisa, if I'm correct on here, would it be under the general expenses he had projected at 2727412? That would go down to 2693682, taking out the about 33,730. That 25,000 plus the, what was it back that we had?
So I took 3,400 out from overtime.
Right.
Took 5330 out of environmental education.
Right.
And took 25,000 out of contract labor because we'd already moved that.
Right.
And then I moved some 90,000 back and forth, so that was a
wash. Right.
So total, I took out of the budget was. My adding machine's stupid. So my new bottom line is 5679882, basically. Because we took 330.
Can you repeat that number? I'm sorry, Lisa. Could you repeat that number
again? Where
did
you get high from?
On page 76. The bottom line request was 5.7 million.
Yep.
That includes salaries and everything.
Yeah, the numbers on that last page includes salaries.
Oh, okay.
Again, it was page 76.
Mm-hmm.
And you got it down to which?
5679882.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
I'm concerned in saying, I think we've made some good changes here, and I, Mike and Marianne, I thank you for, you know, a couple of those smaller line items that we pulled the numbers down on. I have some concerns because we just don't know where we're going with the Hickory Grove septic right now. So, I think Supervisor Faisal made a good suggestion, which is if you put off that cabin for a year, you could get all the sewer replacement done out of the reserve.
McFarland.
Yeah, not the sewer replacement. I'm sorry, McFarland out of the reserve. And then revisit the cabin.
And don't misunderstand, I think the cabins are important. I'm not saying that I think they're not important. I'm just saying maybe we do a couple projects at a time instead of all of them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a lot more to offer there than what I did, and recognizing that we think it is a need, we think it is one that we want to move forward with. That we think we'll get that payment back on it, that cost back on it relatively quickly. That it's not costing other than some maintenance, you know, some maintenance expenses, O&M expenses, it's not costing the Story County taxpayers, and it is meeting both a need, opportunity, and a promise that we see there.
I guess my question is, we've been dealing with the Hickory Grove, it seems like forever. I mean, it certainly has been since I've been here, and I think it has started beforehand, that a number of the projects is getting kind of pushed off to the next year. Understand that COVID played a role in that. I just want, I'd like to see that get done. That's a big project in itself that I want to see get that done.
The Hickory Grove project, is that what you said, Lisa?
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. We want to see that done. Yeah, so if for some reason, like I said, we need to come up with some funding for that, then we would bounce the lake and or the cabin to meet that need.
And I think what that does, and then looking at McFarland Lake later, is, you know, I mean, I think we're looking at maintaining things we already have operational, mm-hmm. and we're looking at water quality. And to me, those just come to the very top of the list here. So I don't know that, you know, I think if we determine that the septic does not fit into the final rule of the ARPA, I think the decision is made. If not, we might have to come back and revisit.
Agreed. We agreed. If we don't come up with that roughly 500,000 elsewhere, that we are going to meet that commitment and that intent that we had previously established with that coming out of the reserve.
I don't have anything else other than the issues we've talked about.
Yeah, I do not either. I appreciate all the time that you spent putting the budget together and walking us through all the ins and outs, Mike, Marianne.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. It's something that we start our budget process every year at the beginning of October, and go through several in-house reviews and in-house renditions of a request, and then ultimately take a working draft forward to the Conservation Board for more discussion and refinement, and then ultimately end up with what we present to you. So it's something that from all levels of conservation, from staff up to and all levels of staff up to board, we vet thoroughly and only bring forward that amount that we're comfortable with and responsible with, responsive to the community with. So we appreciate that recognition. I think Marianne probably loses a lot of sleep and pulls her hair out for putting this budget together.
Well, it's a complicated budget, and Marianne, you can blame Mike for that because of all the money that he brings in from various sources. There's a backhanded compliment for you, Mike.
Well, yeah, and in all honesty, I write very few of those grants. Those grants are written by Pat Sheehan, by Ryan Wiemold, and the other staff members, Brandon Clough, and we kind of spread the love on grant applications, and we've been very successful with that. So we take a team approach to all of that.
And I also know that DNR contacted you, even called you about a couple things recently when they had some money and they thought Story County could put it to good use, so that's a compliment.
Yeah, thank you. Something that we didn't discuss today. So, relationships are just critically important to how we operate our program here and ultimately provide the best benefit we can to the county. And when you have a major partner, major funder like DNR call and say, hey, let's get a grant request in on your behalf for this federal money, then we're all ears. So it's been a successful relationship.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. If we have nothing else, we are done. You guys have a great day.